I want you to imagine trying to predict the exact path of a bouncing ball. Only this isn't just a normal ball. It's literally the size of a planet.
Right.
And it's interacting with, you know, oceans, mountain ranges, the heat of the sun, all at the exact same time. It's spinning, it's covered in moisture, and every single time it bounces, it fundamentally alters how the next bounce will behave.
Which is an absolute nightmare to calculate.
Exactly. That is the sheer existential terror of trying to build an Earth system model to predict our climate. Welcome to today's deep dive, everyone. I'm your host, and today we're unpacking a truly fascinating research paper by Aniruddha Bora, Shixuan Zhang, and their colleagues at Brown University and the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here to dig into this one because, I mean, predicting the climate is arguably one of the most complex computational challenges humanity has ever taken on. You're trying to simulate the chaotic fluid dynamics of an entire world day after day for decades.
Which is why this new paper really caught my attention. The mission today is to look at how these researchers are basically, well, they aren't trying to build a perfectly accurate physical model from scratch.
Right. No, that would be nearly impossible.
Yeah. Instead, they're taking an older, slightly blurry physical climate model and surgically implanting an AI brain to act as its, like, subconscious.
Yeah, they refer to this in the paper as adding cadence-limited neural operator updates. Which is a mouthful.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack this right away because that sounds like heavy science fiction. What does cadence limited actually mean in this context?
So it basically means the AI isn't micromanaging the simulation every single millisecond. The underlying physics engine, the traditional thermodynamic equations, is still doing all the heavy lifting.
Okay, so the AI is just kind of stepping in occasionally.
Exactly. At a specific rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
A cadence of, say, every 3 hours. The neural network wakes up, looks at the state of the climate, realizes the physics model is maybe starting to drift off course, and gently corrects it before, you know, going back to sleep.
Got it. So we aren't throwing away the old physics models at all. We're just giving them this real-time bias correction. But before we get into the actual AI solution, I feel like we need to talk about why that physics model is drifting off course in the first place.
Yeah, we have to understand the bottleneck. And it really comes down to the curse of low resolution.
Right.
When scientists run these massive Earth system models, specifically the E3SM model, which this team used, they have to divide the globe into a mathematical grid. Think of it as wrapping a giant 3D chessboard around the Earth.
Right, but because you're trying to simulate decades into the future, you can't make those grid squares too small, right?
No, absolutely not.
Like the computing power required would just melt the servers.
You need supercomputers that draw the power of a small city just to run one simulation. Because computing power is finite, the grid boxes in a standard affordable model have to be relatively large. Typically, we're talking about 100 kilometers across.
Wait, 100 kilometers? So a single pixel in this simulation is 100 kilometers wide. You could have a thunderstorm, a patch of clear sky, and a blizzard happening in the exact same box. And the model just averages all of that out into one single number.
But that is the core issue, yeah.
Yeah.
And because you are missing those crucial fine details, the physics engine starts to make small mathematical mistakes. It misjudges the exact moisture of a cloud formation or the precise angle of a storm track.
And I guess over a few days, that doesn't matter too much.
Right. In the short term, maybe you don't notice. But over simulated months and years, those tiny errors compound. A storm is 50 miles off course, which changes the wind, which changes an ocean current.
Uh-huh.
And eventually the model drifts significantly away from reality.
Which is what they call systematic bias.
Exactly.
I picture it like trying to paint a highly detailed photorealistic portrait using a giant 6-inch paint roller. You get the broad strokes, like you can tell it's a face, but you completely miss the eyelashes.
That's a great analogy.
So how have scientists historically fixed a model when they're stuck using that giant paint roller?
Well, historically, they rely on a brute force technique called nudging. Scientists take highly accurate, high-resolution historical data, like the ERFI reanalysis, which is essentially the gold standard record of what the weather actually did in the past.
Okay.
And they use that historical record to mathematically tug the blurry, low-resolution model back toward reality every few hours.
Sticking with the painting analogy, nudging is like having a master painter standing directly over your shoulder. Every time you smear the paint with your giant roller, they grab your hand and force it back to the right spot.
Yes. And it works perfectly as long as they're standing right there.
Right.
But the fundamental limitation, becomes really obvious when we think about the ultimate goal of a climate model. The entire point is to predict the future, right? The 2030s, the 2050s.
And we don't have ERA 5 data for 2050.
Exactly. When we run the model freely into the future, we don't possess that historical data. We do not have an answer key to nudge toward.
The master painter goes home, and you're just left alone with your giant roller.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is the exact gap the AI in this paper is designed to fill. The researchers asked, what if we could train a neural network to learn the exact systematic biases of the low-resolution model?
Oh, wow. So if AI learns how the model consistently fails, it can just automatically generate those corrective nudges on its own.
Right. Even when running freely into the future.
That's brilliant. So they need a machine learning architecture that can look at the messy, low-resolution climate state and predict the exact correction needed. And the paper frames this as an image-to-image translation problem.
Which makes a lot of sense, really.
It does, because a global weather map is really just an image with different data channels. Instead of like red, green, and blue pixels, you have temperature, humidity, and wind velocity.
Exactly. And to process those global images, they started with a classic architecture used heavily in medical imaging and computer vision called a UNET.
Okay, a UNET.
Yeah. And their baseline UNET was incredibly small by today's standards. It utilized around 0.2 million parameters.
Okay, I'm kind of hung up on that parameter count, because in the broader AI world right now, like with the large language models everyone is using, the golden rule is basically just add more parameters to make the model smarter.
By the prevailing trend, yeah.
If 0.2 million parameters is considered small, did they try scaling it up?
They did. They built a version called UNET-MP, and they expanded it to a massive 6.7 million parameters.
Hmm.
But And this is where the paper reveals a really fascinating twist about physics and machine learning when they took that larger unit MP and plugged it into the climate model to run online.
Meaning the AI's corrections were actively feeding back into the simulation?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. When they ran it online, the bigger model actually degraded the performance.
Wait, really? Why would a smarter, larger AI make the climate model worse? Does the more parameters rule just not translate to atmospheric physics?
It completely backfired. And it offers a critical lesson in how neural networks handle physical systems. You see, the Earth's climate is inherently noisy. There are massive chaotic variations, especially in regions like the Southern Hemisphere storm tracks.
Right. Very turbulent down there.
So when you give a model drastically more parameters without changing its underlying architecture, it basically gains an enormous capacity to memorize data rather than actually understand it.
Oh, I see where this is going. It's overfitting.
Exactly. It's overfitting. Instead of learning the true underlying physical equations of the climate, the inflated UNET-MP simply memorized the chaotic noise of its training data.
Oh, wow.
So when it was deployed online, where every correction it makes becomes the new reality for the next time step, it started hallucinating corrections based on that memorized noise. You created massive runaway warm biases over the Southern Ocean. The AI just overcorrected, and the error snowballed until the model broke down entirely.
That's wild. It's like giving a student a practice test, and instead of actually learning the math formulas, they just memorize the specific numbers in the answers.
Perfect analogy, yeah.
The second you change the numbers on the real test, they fail spectacularly because they don't actually know math.
Right. It proves that in complex physical systems, raw size is not a substitute for architectural intelligence. They needed smarter parameters, not just more of them.
Okay, so how did they solve it? If scaling up a basic unit just leads to hallucinations, what architecture actually understands the physics?
Well, this leads us to the two major breakthroughs of the paper. They developed architectures named iUNET and MNM.
Okay.
Both of these stayed at that roughly 6.7 million parameter budget, so they had the same computational weight as the failed model, but they radically changed how the network processed the climate data.
Let's look at iUNET first. What does the I stand for?
Inception.
Like the movie.
Like the neural network module. Though, you know, equally complex. Instead of looking at the data with just one fixed lens, iUNET uses multiple parallel filters, these inception blocks, to analyze the climate data simultaneously.
Oh, interesting. So what are the filters looking for?
It has a filter looking for fine micro details, another looking for medium patterns, and another looking for broad coarse patterns all at the same time.
And according to the paper, this was incredibly effective for predicting specific humidity, which tracks, if you think about how water behaves in the atmosphere, right? Humidity is very fragmented.
Absolutely.
Clouds are discrete, patchy structures. They aren't smooth, continuous gradients. So by looking at multiple scales at once, IUNET could capture those broken patterns of moisture perfectly.
Exactly. IUNET handled fragmented data beautifully. But when it came to smooth, continuous forces, like the massive bands of wind and temperature that wrap around the globe, the researchers hit a different bottleneck. Traditional UNETs struggle with something called upsampling.
Upsampling. Okay, that's when the AI shrinks an image down to analyze the deep patterns and then has to, like, blow it back up to its original size to output the final prediction, right?
Correct. And in a standard UNET, that blowing up process can actually lose some of the crucial low-resolution spatial features. The underlying structure of the wind or the temperature gets slightly distorted during the resizing.
Like compressing a JPEG photo too many times until it gets all that weird artifacting.
Exactly like that. So to fix that, they built the second architecture, MNM, which stands for Multiscale Network.
And how does MNM fix the compression issue?
MNM fixes this data loss by using a three-branch upsampling decoder. It basically uses three completely different mathematical methods to expand the data back to its full size, and then it fuses those three outputs together. The paper actually includes a really detailed matrix algebra proof showing that this multi-branch design is full rank.
Okay, for those of us who haven't taken linear algebra in a while or ever, what does full rank actually mean in plain English?
It guarantees mathematically that the matrix representing the climate data retains all of its independent dimensions. Absolutely no underlying spatial features are lost in translation when the image is blown back up. The structure remains perfectly intact.
That is incredibly elegant.
Yeah.
Wow. But as impressive as IUNET and MNM are, the paper makes it clear that neither of them would have worked without this sort of secret ingredient, film conditioning.
Yes. Future-wise linear modulation.
Yeah. The acronym is definitely better.
Definitely.
The way I understand it, before film, the AI was essentially blindfolded. I mean, it was just looking at raw floating numbers.
Right.
It saw a temperature reading of 20 degrees Celsius, but it had no idea if that 20 degrees was happening over the Sahara Desert or, you know, the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Which is the massive blind spot. Because mm-hmm. the fluid dynamics of the atmosphere behave fundamentally differently over a rough landmass like a mountain range than they do over smooth open water or over reflective sea ice.
Right. So what the researchers did was they took this vital metadata, the land fraction, the sea ice fraction, the latitude, the longitude, and they injected it into every single layer of the neural network using film. It acts as a scalar embedding, essentially a mathematical context clue.
Exactly.
Oh, I see. So without that, the AI is just guessing based on the number. But with film, you're basically handing the AI a topographic map. Now it knows, hey, I'm over the Rocky Mountains right now. I need to adjust my wind correction to account for the peaks.
And the magnitude of the improvement this brought cannot be overstated. The researchers tested their baseline model without this topographic map, and it had massive spatial errors, particularly over Antarctica and Central Asia. It was just totally lost.
Wow.
Simply adding this contextual film embedding increased its spatial pattern agreement with reality by up to 3 times.
3 times better, just by telling the AI where it is on the globe.
Yes. It really highlights how crucial geophysical context is in machine learning. Mm-hmm. You simply cannot decouple the atmosphere from the surface it rests upon.
Makes total sense. All right, so we have these incredibly smart, context-aware, mathematically sound AI models. Now comes the ultimate test, right? They have to take off the training wheels. We're moving from the offline tests, where the AI is just looking at historical spreadsheets, to the online integration.
And this is the crucible for any hybrid system. Online integration means they actually plugged the PyTorch neural network directly into the Fortran code of the E3SM climate model.
Let's just pause on that for a second, because that sounds like a software engineering nightmare. You have an Earth system model written in Fortran, which is this rigid, decades-old language built for supercomputing arrays, and you're trying to make it talk to a modern AI written in Python and PyTorch.
It is a massive feat of bridging software, yeah.
Yeah.
They had to construct a specialized pipeline so that the Fortran physics engine could, like, pause its calculations, call out to the Python script, hand over the entire global state of the climate, wait for the neural network to calculate the nudging tendencies, inject those corrections back into the Fortran arrays, and then resume the simulation.
That's insane.
And it does this seamlessly every 3 hours of simulated time. For 5 straight years.
From 2012 to 2016, right?
Yes.
And remember, the AI was only trained on data from 2009 and 2010. It has never seen the years 2012 to 2016 before. So how did it perform when left entirely to its own devices?
Exceptionally well, actually. The M&M and IUNet models achieved a 2 to 10% reduction in the root mean square error, which is basically the overall deviation from historical reality across most key thermodynamic and dynamical fields.
Wow.
Yeah, they reduced systematic biases in the winds and the temperature, and they remained completely numerically stable for the entire 5-year run.
And crucially, the simulation's precipitation improved. I found this so fascinating because the researchers explicitly noted that they didn't apply any direct post-processing corrections to the water cycle. They didn't tell the AI to fix the rain. The AI just naturally helped the model rain more accurately.
Because the entire fluid dynamic system is coupled. If your neural network corrects the atmospheric temperature and the wind patterns, the moisture in the air is going to behave more realistically as a natural downstream consequence.
Right. It's all connected. So, what does this all mean for you, the listener? Why does it matter if this M&M architecture reduced an error metric by 10%? It really comes down to the economics of computing.
This is perhaps the most profound real-world implication of the entire paper. Earlier, we talked about those 100-kilometer grid boxes. Let's say you want to refine that resolution. You want a sharper picture. So you reduce the boxes to 25 kilometers.
Okay.
Because space is three-dimensional and time scales non-linearly with finer grids, making the resolution 4 times sharper requires a 64-fold increase in computational cost.
64 times the power, the electricity, the supercomputer time. That's just like economically paralyzing to run long-term forecasts at that resolution.
Exactly. But by contrast, running these AI plugins is astonishingly cheap. The baseline uncorrected climate model could simulate 12.7 years of climate per day of real-time computing.
Right.
When they plugged in the heavy M&M or IUNet models, the speed only dropped to somewhere between 1.3 and 8.5 simulated years per day. And they were running these neural networks entirely on standard CPUs, not even specialized AI accelerator chips.
That is a staggering bargain.
Yeah.
Humanity is getting a massive leap in high-fidelity climate predictions, a real-time correction of the model's biases, and we completely bypass the need to build a 64 times bigger supercomputer.
It is a highly effective shortcut. And to maintain scientific rigor here, we must also look at where the AI stumbled. This hybrid approach is a massive step forward, but it definitely has a distinct Achilles heel.
Yeah, it wasn't all perfectly corrected rain. The paper highlights that the machine learning model struggled heavily in two main areas. First, the upper troposphere, specifically altitudes above 200 HPA.
For context, 200 hectopascals is roughly 12 kilometers up. That is above the cruising altitude of a commercial jetliner.
So, really high up, why did the AI fail up there?
The upper troposphere is inherently difficult to model because the air is incredibly thin, the variance in the data is high, and the signal-to-noise ratio is incredibly low.
Yeah.
It is mathematically very hard for a neural network to find a stable, repeating pattern in that environment without just overfitting to the noise.
Okay, that makes sense. And the second area where the AI struggled was in the polar regions, specifically during the seasons when sea ice is rapidly forming or melting. And this points to a much deeper issue in machine learning, the out-of-sample problem.
Yes. The models were trained on just 2 years of data, 2009 and 2010, but their big test, that online free run, happened between 2012 and 2016. If you know your meteorological history, you know that 2015 to 2016 featured an absolute monster, record-breaking El Niño event.
Right. And the El Niño Southern Oscillation fundamentally reorganizes global atmospheric circulation. It shifts heat and moisture across the entire planet in ways that just don't happen during normal years.
Exactly.
And our AI models had absolutely no concept of what an El Niño was because there wasn't one in 2009 or 2010.
This touches on the fundamental difference between interpolators and extrapolators. Neural networks are exceptional interpolators. If you show them point A and point C, they are incredibly good at guessing what point B looks like.
Right.
But they are notoriously poor extrapolators. If you ask them to guess point F completely outside the bounds of anything they've ever seen, they break down. They cannot invent physics they haven't been exposed to.
They only know the physics they have seen. It's like if you train a student strictly on a specific curriculum from 2009,
Yeah.
you can't be shocked when they fail a test question about an unprecedented event in 2015.
Absolutely. And this proves exactly why we can't just throw out traditional physical models and replace them entirely with AI, which is a trend some technologists push for.
Oh, yeah, the AI can solve everything crowd.
Right. We absolutely need these hybrid models. We need the traditional physical equations, the Fortran engine, to handle the unprecedented out-of-sample shocks, like a massive El Nino or an unprecedented spike in greenhouse gases. And we need the AI to act as the constant steady hand correcting the known everyday biases.
They need each other. The physics engine is the imagination that can calculate a future that has never existed, and the AI is the grounded intuition that keeps the physics engine from drifting off into mathematical fantasy.
That is a beautiful synthesis, and the researchers acknowledge this limitation openly. The immediate next step for this technology is simply to train it on a much longer, more diverse data set. Decades of weather, encompassing multiple El Niños, La Niñas, and polar vortex disruptions. The AI is a much wider foundation of physics to draw from.
Makes sense. Let's take a step back and just look at the whole journey today. We started with legacy coarse resolution climate models that were cheap to run but suffered from compounding blurry biases. The old solution was nudging, but that requires you to already know the answer.
Right. So the team from Brown and PNNL retrofitted the model. They learned that in chaotic climate systems, simply bloating a neural network with millions of parameters just causes it to memorize noise and hallucinate. So they got smarter.
They built the multiscale MNM to preserve spatial resolution and the parallel filtering IUNet for fragmented data like humidity. They handed the AI a topographic map using film conditioning so it actually knew if it was looking at a mountain or an ocean.
Yes.
And when they finally bridged that Python AI with the legacy Fortran simulation, it successfully corrected the climate's trajectory, reducing errors by up to 10%, all while running on standard CPUs.
It is a remarkable achievement in scalable computing, and it matters profoundly. The output of these Earth system models dictates global agricultural planning, the design of trillion-dollar coastal infrastructure, and international disaster preparedness. Getting better, sharper predictions without waiting decades for supercomputing hardware to catch up is a critical victory.
It really buys us time we desperately need. But as we wrap up, I want to leave you, the listener, with a broader thought to chew on. Today, we looked at how researchers successfully took an aging, rigid physical simulation and surgically attached an AI to act as a real-time subconscious, quietly working in the background to correct the system's blind spots.
It is a total paradigm shift for scientific computing.
So if an AI can successfully act as the corrective subconscious for an entire Earth-sized physical simulation, what other legacy scientific systems running our world are just waiting for a neural network retrofit? Think about our massive, sluggish macroeconomic models predicting global supply chains or the rigid epidemiological models we rely on during a pandemic.
Wow.
How many of the traditional algorithms governing our daily lives are slowly drifting off course, waiting for an AI subconscious to step in and gently nudge them back to reality? Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.